Friends, and welcome to another trip down memory lane, back to the days when radios told great stories. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and invite you to gather with me again around the old part of the radio. Today I'm featuring a great detective play and a great comedy play. We'll start with the detective play, which is from arguably the most famous radio series in North America. Who knows? The Shallow knows. The Shallow ran from July 31st, 1930 until Boxing Day 1954, starting on CBS, but later switching to NBC and ending on Mutual. The most revered episodes of the series aired between 1937 and 1938 and starred Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston, who learned to cloud men's minds so they could hear him but not see him. The role of the Shallow remained the same even after Welles' departure and remains to this day a truly iconic series from the golden age of radio. Today's episode is titled Terror of Madman's Deep, and starred Bill Johnson as Cranston and the Shallow. It was first heard the evening of Sunday, October 24th, 1942, on the Mutual Network. Enjoy.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shallow knows.
Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of the Shallow. The hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. No need to worry about heat this winter. Blue coal dealers everywhere are delivering anthracite as fast as wartime transportation facilities will permit. There'll be some coal in every bin, enough for immediate need. That's the goal of your friendly blue coal dealer. You can help him by being patient and cooperative, by permitting your dealer to deliver just the amount of coal that you require for immediate comfort. Don't insist that a full winter's supply be delivered at once. There's enough coal to go around. But at present, the supply must be equally shared by everyone. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Several years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret. The secret of hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Mystery of Madman's Deep. Far, far down in the icy waters of the sea lay the end of a quest. A quest for a secret by which men might make the dead live again. Moving slowly through a deep fog, we follow the narrow road that is to lead to the answer to the mystery of the Madman's Deep.
Seems to me the road should have made a left turn here. Only this heavy fog would lift.
Oh, Lamont, now don't tell me you're lost.
Lost? Why? I know every foot of this country around here.
Oh, look out!
Huh? See? I was right. The road did make a left turn. If we kept on this way, we'd have gone right over the cliff and into the ocean.
Oh, how jolly.
You know, Margot, we must be rather close to Madman's Deep.
Well, whatever Madman's Deep is, I'm sure it must be something quite delightful to stay away from.
Years ago, a madman leaped into it from the cliffs there. As his body was never recovered, the legend arose that the waters go down to the center of the earth. Let's get out and have a look around.
All right.
Yeah, there's the spot, all right. Madman's Deep is somewhere down there in the fog.
What was that?
It was queer, wasn't it? Sound?
On the
front. Yeah, it sounds as if it's down there someplace. Can't see a thing, though. Fog's getting thicker every second.
Yes, if you ask me, I'm staying right here until it clears, too. I'm not taking any more chances on you turning right when the road turns left.
Oh, say, come to think of it, I know a man who has a home near here.
Oh, really?
Suppose while we're waiting, we drop in on him. Should be a path leading to the place over this way. Oh, no, wait, wait. I guess it's over this way.
Now, look. You sure it isn't over that way?
Oh, no. That way would lead down to the beach. Come along. I know this bit of the country perfectly.
Who in the world would have a home out here in this bleak place anyway?
Oh, he's quite famous. Used to be head of a big perfumery concern in France. Maybe you've heard of him. Pierre Lemaire.
Pierre Lemaire? No. The name leaves me colder than this fog.
I presume he built his house out here to be close to the sea. May find it a bit gloomy.
And what does Lemaire do? Live in a bat-infested attic and come out only at night?
No. He lives with his daughter and a Dr. Pace. Dr. Pace and Lemaire are engaged in biological research. Remember reading in the papers a year or so ago about protozoic extract? That's Lemaire's discovery.
Well, not those crazy articles about the stuff that keeps you living forever.
Oh, no, they weren't so crazy as they seemed.
Oh, Lamar.
Lemaire has a rather sound foundation for his theory. Hello. Say, this was the path to the beach after all.
Yes, so I see. You can't run the car into the ocean. You're going to walk into it. And you know every foot of this country.
Well, I...
Lamar, look, someone's coming.
Yes. Why, Miss Lemaire?
Oh, it's Mr. Cranston, isn't it?
Yes, what's wrong?
My father, he's been drowned.
Oh, no.
Drowned?
His yacht was wrecked here in Madeline's Deep.
But when did it happen?
I don't know when it happened. My father spent a great deal of time on the boat. He kept it moored here. There was a laboratory.
Yes, I know, but what...
He'd been working there for about 6 days. This morning when I came down for a walk on the beach, I saw a wreckage floating on the water. Bit furniture.
But that doesn't necessarily mean...
And the yacht was gone. Setting off depth charges now to see what they can bring up to the surface.
Oh, dear, I am so sorry.
Mr. Lemaire, Sheriff Cunningham and the men of...
Oh, my name is Cranston. I'm a friend of Mr. Lemaire.
I'm Grover Teague.
Mr. Teague was also a friend of my father's. He's a director of the Biological Foundation.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Lemaire, they've found the body. Here they are.
Let me see him.
I wouldn't if I was you, miss. He's been in the water for quite a spell.
But I was.
I think she's right. You'd better let her.
Oh. No. No, it isn't my father. It's the servant who was with him, Whitley.
You might as well take him along, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
And the boat did go down. My father's dead.
Miss Lemaire, there's nothing anyone can say at a time like this, but your father, during his life, contributed a great deal to science.
And his work will go on. The large endowment he made to the Biological Foundation...
Endowment? I'm not aware of any endowment he made to the Biological Foundation.
Well, I'm simply assuming. I mean, he often mentioned that he intended...
No one will know what my father intended until his will has been read.
Naturally. I shouldn't even have suggested the matter. May I take you home now?
No, I can go by myself.
You don't want to go back to that empty house.
Dr. Pace is there, and I'd rather walk back alone.
Yes, Miss Lemaire, I know how you feel.
I don't suppose any of us can do anything, really.
No, nothing. My father's gone down to the bottom of Madman's Deep. No one ever returns from there.
Who is it?
Guy, Dr. Pace, Judith.
Oh, you're back. What happened?
They found Whitley's body, that's all.
And Mr. Lemaire?
They never found him. Why are you so interested, anyway?
If the wreck didn't occur too long ago, there might still be a chance of saving him.
Don't talk like a fool. Mr. Lemaire is dead.
So were those tadpoles when we injected the protozoic extract into them. But they're alive now.
You can't overcome death.
Science can overcome anything. But stupidity.
Oh, I'm stupid, am I?
Very.
If your stuff's so good, why didn't it bring the guinea pig to life?
We made a slight mistake with the guinea pig. We used the same solution that we used for the tadpoles. And tadpoles are cold-blooded animals. They live in water. The guinea pig turned into an underwater creature which couldn't live in the air. We didn't find it out until it had died.
Too bad you didn't find that Mr. Lemaire could be turned into an underwater creature before his boat went down.
However, I have corrected the solution. It'll work very nicely now. It'll even work with Mr. LeMaire. When they find him, I shall inject the solution into his heart.
Oh, Robert.
I have the apparatus all set up in the laboratory, ready to begin the moment they bring his body home. The final test. The supreme test. The dead. Made to live.
Oh, you're insane. So is LeMaire. Spending all that money to scoop up stuff out of the ocean? Trying to make an elixir of life out of it? Completely insane.
Oh, don't worry about the money. He had plenty left. Not that you'll get any of it.
Why, what do you mean? Who else would he leave it to? I'm his daughter.
Are you indeed, Miss Dawson?
Dawson?
You recognize your own name, don't you? In case you've forgotten your family history, your real father's name was Henri Valson.
My father?
After he died, your mother married Mr. LeMaire. At that time, you were 5 years old.
Pierre LeMaire adopted me.
Oh, yes? When?
When I was a little girl, in Paris.
How odd. Because I looked into your adoption records. There aren't any.
Why, you...
So
you...
all these years you put in scheming to get your fingers on LeMaire's fortune have come to nothing.
I'd like to kill you for this.
Yes?
And I would. Except I can think of something better. Yes, much better.
Wait. Where are you going? Come out of that laboratory.
So all the years I've spent here have been wasted, have they?
Get out of this laboratory.
Well, so have all the years you've spent here. So have all your crazy experiments.
Leave that equipment alone.
There'll be nothing but broken glass. Still chemicals.
Don't, for the love of...
Bring the dead to life, please. No.
The protozoic extract. Still. Destroyed.
No doubt you think you'll get his money. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Commissioner Weston speaking. Oh, yes. Tell Mr. Cranston to come on in.
Cranston?
There's a friend of mine, Mr. Teague. I have an appointment with him, if you don't mind.
Not in the least, Commissioner. As a matter of fact, I know Mr. Cranston. I met him 4 years ago. Hello, Mr. Cranston. Remember me?
Why, yes, of course. How are you, Mr. Teague?
Very well, thank you.
It's been some time since we've seen each other.
Exactly 4 years. LeMaire was drowned on the 16th of October, 1938. Night his yacht was wrecked in a bad storm.
The 16th of October, 1938? Well, it has been a long time.
All right, Cranston, what do you know about LeMaire?
Oh, nothing except he went down aboard his yacht and his body never has been recovered.
I've been telling the commissioner there have been some new developments. You may recall Dr. Pace. Well, he has produced a letter signed by LeMaire and dated October 1939.
October 1939? Well, that's a year after LeMaire's death.
Yes. And Pace claims that LeMaire is still alive.
What became of him after the port was wrecked in the storm? Where's he been?
Well, perhaps the letter was written before the wreck and simply misdated.
Have you yourself seen the letter, Mr. Teague?
Oh, yes. Dr. Pace even allowed me to make a photostatic copy of it. I have it right here.
Yeah. October 10th, 1939, my dear Dr. Pace, and feeling somewhat better now, although the wreck was a dreadful experience.
Why, he mentions this wreck.
Yes. So you see, the letter couldn't have been written before the wreck and misdated. Pardon me, Commissioner.
I am leaving for France in a few days. Whatever is left of my fortune is yours to proceed with our experiments. That is an obvious forgery. Pace is trying to get hold of LeMaire's estate.
Who inherited LeMaire's estate, anyway?
No one as yet. As his body was never found, the will won't be read until the court declares LeMaire legally dead. But his only direct heir is his daughter. However, I'm not interested in the will.
No, Cranston. Mr. Teague is a trustee of the Biological Institute. LeMaire was an officer, and some of the Institute's funds are tied up with his estate.
And I'm trying to find some way of getting them released. If we can prove that LeMaire really drowned...
Of course he was drowned.
I am not so sure he was drowned.
Well, it stands to reason. Well, I'll settle the question. I'll send a diver down into Madman's Deep.
Good, Commissioner. But the first thing I'd do would be to have a talk with this Dr. Pace. He might prove interesting.
Well, a fellow must be down and out to live in a place like this. I'm beginning to put this case together already. After LeMaire's death, Dr. Pace couldn't find another job, so he schemed up a way to get hold of LeMaire's money. He framed that fake letter and...
Yes?
Dr. Pace?
Yes?
I'm Police Commissioner Weston. This is Mr. Cranston. I'd like to talk to you.
Why should the police want to talk to me?
Merely to get some information, Doctor. About Pierre LeMaire.
Oh. Well, come in. Come in, please. This is my laboratory.
I live here, too. I've been a little pressed for cash lately.
I understand you were Mr. Lemaire's assistant, Dr. Page.
15 years we worked together. We were on the brink of a tremendous discovery. We would have abolished death. Come here, let me show you. There's tadpoles you've been swimming about.
Yes?
Once they were dead, we restored them to life. That was more than 5 years ago. It's true, they never became frogs, but they're still alive. The dead, made to live.
In your opinion, Doctor, what happened?
I tried the same experiment with a dead guinea pig, but the solution was wrong. The guinea pig turned into an underwater creature.
An underwater creature?
Yes, we didn't realize it could only remain in the air for short periods. So it died. Then I corrected the solution. But before I could try it, Judith Lemaire spilled the protozoic extract we'd been years in preparing. I could kill her. I could kill her.
Dr. Pace.
I'm sorry. 15 years of research wasted. I haven't the money to go on with it now.
Dr. Pace, when was the last time you saw Pierre Lemaire alive?
Mr. Lemaire is still alive. Judith Dowson tried to murder him, wrecked his boat.
Judith Dowson?
That's her real name. Dowson, not Lemaire.
Huh? Dr. Pace, we're sending out a diver into Madman's Deep to look for Lemaire's body.
But Lemaire didn't drown. He isn't there. He's alive.
Well, we'll find out about that anyway.
Even if he had drowned, it's been 4 years. There'll be nothing left of him.
There'll be enough to determine whether or not he did drown. I thought you might like to cooperate with us.
I don't know anything about it. Talk to Judith. She's the one who wrecked the yacht. Ask her.
That's an excellent suggestion. We shall ask her. Good evening, Dr. Pace.
Evening, Doctor. And thank you.
Before we're through with this, I wouldn't be surprised if we had a killer to deal with.
Judith Lemaire?
Oh, don't be naive. How would a woman wreck a boat? Something a man would figure out. I suspect the man was Dr. Pace.
Huh? And the motive?
He wanted the old man's fortune. He assumed the money would be left to carry on the experiments.
Uh-huh.
Then after he'd killed Lemaire, he became afraid the estate would go to Judith. So he trumped up that fake letter, naming himself as the beneficiary.
A perfectly logical deduction. Even brilliant.
Well, thanks.
Except that it's 100% wrong.
Wrong?
I don't think either Judith Lemaire or Dr. Pace wrecked the boat. I don't think either one of them are killers. I'm not even certain Lemaire was drowned.
The servant was drowned, wasn't he? If Lemaire was aboard that yacht, he must have been drowned, too.
Oh, I feel certain Lemaire was aboard the yacht, all right. In fact, I feel certain that he's still there.
What on earth are you talking about? If Lemaire's on the boat, he's dead. A man can't live underwater for 4 years. Cranston, don't tell me you believe that this protozoic stuff could keep a man alive underwater.
Well, I might be able to tell you more about that when I come up from the bottom of Madman's Deep.
When you come up?
Yes. You see, I'm going down with the diver.
In just a moment, we'll return to the shadow. But right now, here are some answers to the letters that so many of you have sent John Barclay. Mr. Barclay, here's a question asked by many people. I have an 8-room house and only 2 tons of anthracite in my bin. My dealer has assured me that this is ample for immediate requirements. How long can I expect this coal to last under normal weather conditions?
The answer to that question, Ken, is that in the average 8-room house with normal construction, a ton of coal should last from 4 to 5 weeks.
And by sharing equally, everyone can be comfortably warm this winter. And now, back to the shadow.
Sure, I've been diving for 7 years, Mr. Clanson. This job will be a cinch.
And you don't feel we'll have any trouble finding it?
We'll find what's left of her and what's left of Mr. Lemaire. But after 4 years, it won't be much.
You all ready?
Yep. There's a telephone in your diving helmet, so you and me can talk back and forth to each other and the pump crew here.
Fine.
Well, let's get going. Okay, Jerry, you can fasten on a headgear.
All right.
We're going down.
You okay, Mr. Branson? Yeah. There's a kind of pounding in my ears. That's just the air pressure. A little while, you won't even notice it. Better switch on your flash.
Right.
I'll go ahead and you follow along. But don't get too close to me or our lines might foul. Mr. Carson, yes? Swing the beam in your light. Over to the left. See anything? Yes, I see something. Sort of a dog shape. Might be a lot. call. Hello up there.
Hello?
We found her. She stood it out quite a bit in the mud. Almost up to her neck. Watch the line. We're going aboard.
Okay.
Mind you stop, Mr. Grafton. Chipper and Miss Dick are pretty nearly running away. Not much left of the old top. Won't be anything left of the man. Skeleton, maybe. Mr. Grafton, yes? Flash your light through the cabin window here while I see if I can.
Hello, down there. What's happened?
The man is in the cabin sitting in a chair. Another skeleton is seemingly alive and perfect for help. The flesh looks smooth and firm. The eyes are open. He seems to be laughing. He's moving. He's coming down the window. Get back. Let go. Be careful. You're tangled in the line. He's moving. He's coming towards us. Get back. He's...
Hello, down there. Hello. Cranston. Richard. Answer us. Hello? Hello, answer us. Hurry up there.
Please hurry.
All right, you guys, get that helmet off.
Yes, for heaven's sake.
Come on. Here, let me. Cranston.
Oh, Lamont, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, I'm quite all right.
Where's Richard?
Oh, right here, Mr. Cranston. I guess I sort of messed things up. Tangled the lines and busted one of the phone cables.
What on earth happened down there?
Well, Commissioner, it was one of the most curious sights I've ever witnessed.
But what happened?
Chemical reaction you probably wouldn't find occurring anyplace else on Earth.
Yes, but...
Well, then it might have been the extremely low temperature that caused it.
Will you please tell me...
Lemaire's body was completely preserved.
The guy actually walked.
What?
Well, not actually. When the water was agitated, it caused the body to move. But Lemaire is dead, all right. Shot in the back.
What did I tell you? It was murder.
And after Lemaire was shot and killed, the sea cuffs were open and the boat was sunk.
And that letter which Dr. Pace had was a forgery.
Of course.
Yeah.
Just as you summarized, he was trying to get hold of Lemaire's fortune.
Well, in 1 hour from now, I'll have Dr. Pace under arrest for murder.
Oh, but it wasn't Dr. Pace who killed Lemaire.
Well, Lamont, then who did?
Say, you mean Lemaire's daughter?
No, it wasn't Judith Lemaire out there. Come now, Commissioner. You're guessing.
Who's there?
Why? I'm certain I saw that door open. No one.
Well, Teague.
What?
Why did you kill Pierre Lemaire?
I must be losing my senses. Got to get a grip on myself. Seeing the thing through this far, I must go to pieces now.
Why did you kill him?
That voice again. Who are you? Where are you?
I am the Shadow. I'm right here. You can't see me because I've clouded your mind. Why did you kill Pierre Lemaire?
I didn't kill him.
You went aboard his yacht at night. On the deck, you encountered Lemaire's servant.
No.
You killed him, knocked him overboard.
No.
Then, through the cabin window, you shot Lemaire.
I didn't. It's a lie.
And after that, you opened the seacocks.
Oh.
Why did you do it? And after Mad Men's Deep had guarded your secret so carefully, why did you want a diver sent down?
I won't answer you.
You'll answer now, or you'll hear my voice talking to you the rest of your life.
No.
In the quiet of your room. When you mingle with crowds, when you turn out your lights to sleep.
No.
You'll never know any rest, any peace.
No, no.
You'll never escape me wherever you go. You'll hear me. You'll always hear me.
Wait, I'll answer. Yes, I did kill the mayor. And his servant, too.
Why?
Because the mayor had agreed to will me his fortune. All of it.
Will it to you?
Yes, I'm a trustee of the Biological Institute. I promised him I'd use the money only for research.
But you had other plans, is that it?
Not at first. I intended to carry out his wishes. I swear I did. And then I began thinking all that money could be mine. I could take it for my own and no one would be the wiser.
Go on.
Don't be half crazy. I couldn't wait for him to die a natural death.
Oh, you killed him?
Yes. Expected to get the money right away. Then this fool, Dr. Pace, produced that letter. I was afraid he'd make the court believe LeMaire was still alive. Afraid it would be years and years before the will was opened and the money turned over to me.
And that's why you wanted to establish LeMaire's death.
It was the only way I could get the money. I took a chance. I thought that in 4 years, all traces of the crime would be obliterated. Nothing left of LeMaire but a few bones. Well, now you know why I did it. Now you know.
Hello. Yes, this is Commissioner Weston's office. The gentleman of the press, Marlowe.
Uh-oh.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to talk to Commissioner Weston about the LeMaire case. He solved it personally. Yeah, you're quite welcome. Bye.
Oh, so he solved the case personally.
Well, except for a few details. Oh, of course, he did make a slight mistake in suspecting Dr. Pace and Judith LeMaire, but...
Totally overlooked Mr. Teague. Lamont, what made you suspect him?
Well, Margot, Teague tripped himself up in several ways. He said LeMaire's yacht was wrecked on the evening of October 16th, 1938.
Well?
And yet Judith LeMaire, who discovered the wreck, didn't know herself when it had happened. LeMaire had been away from home aboard the yacht for 6 days.
But I don't see...
Well, the boat might have gone down any one of those 6 days, Margot. How would Teague have known which one? Yet he gave the exact date.
Oh, why, say...
He mentioned October 16th because it was indelibly written in his mind. It was the night he killed Pierre LeMaire. And even though no one even thought at the time of accusing him, his own feeling of guilt prompted him to manufacture an alibi.
An alibi?
Yes. He told Commissioner Weston a bad storm had wrecked the boat. Well, I checked back through the weather reports. And in that vicinity, during the week of October 16th, there were no bad storms.
Now here's Blue Coal's heating expert, John Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts. This afternoon, I have a hint for you ladies, and you'll find it very useful, I'm sure. You know how many colds your family suffers during the winter and early spring, but perhaps you don't realize how many of those colds are caused by the hot, dry air of an overheated house. That kind of heat, in addition to absorbing the natural moisture we need in the air, also dries out and damages furniture. Yet it's an extremely simple matter to remedy this condition and provide your home with the right amount of moisture. Just get one of those long, narrow hot water pans which attach right onto the backs of the radiators. They're designed to hang out of sight, and the water they contain is gradually evaporated by the radiator heat and so provides the needed moisture in the room. You'll find that these pan humidifiers really do a wonderful job of keeping rooms far more comfortable with helpful moisture. And in this way, they reduce the chance of catching or spreading colds and illness. And friends, remember this. Your support of the great drive against infantile paralysis is urgently needed. So join the March of Dimes. Send your contributions to the White House, Washington, D.C., today.
Today's adventure is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Shadow Magazine is now on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, Blue Coal, America's finest anthracite, will again present another thrilling adventure of The Shadow. Be sure to listen and be sure to burn Blue Coal, the solid fuel for solid comfort.
You just heard The Terror of Madman Steep from The Shadow. The episode first aired the evening of October 24th, 1941 on the Mutual Network. Next up is A Life of Riley, a great comedy series starring William Bendix as Chester A. Riley, quote, Raya's resident hardhat. The series originally ran from April 12, 1941 to June 29, 1951, first on CBS, then on NBC. Today's episode is titled Island Fugitive and was first heard at 10 p.m. on Friday, February 9, 1951 on NBC. Enjoy.
Hello? Yeah, this is Ratty. No, we can't come all the way over to your house account if I'm saving gasoline. I'll tell you what you do. You walk over here and visit with us a while, and then later I'll drive you home. Goodbye now.
The Life of Riley. A half hour with radio's newest and friendliest family, and starring William Bendix as Riley. Friends, we're happy to have with us tonight as we meet the Riley family and hope that listening to their problems may help you to forget some of your own. One problem that the Riley family have solved, in common with millions of other American families, is how to best serve in the national war effort. Every week, the Rileys buy war bonds, and they're going to keep on buying war bonds and more war bonds until Johnny comes marching home. Well, the Rileys are on the move again, or rather, they will be as soon as they can find another place to live. The apartment they've been renting in Los Angeles must be vacated by the end of the week. And while breadwinning father has been hard at work in his defense job, Mom has been out house hunting all day, unsuccessfully. It's 6 o'clock and just about time for dinner.
Oh, Junior, I wish you wouldn't do your homework on the dining room table.
Did you have homework when you were a little girl?
Of course.
I bet your teacher didn't pile it on the way mine does.
Seems like all I ever did was homework.
Were you good at arithmetic?
Oh, pretty good.
Then how much would it cost to ship a carload of soft coal 900 miles if the freight rate is 15 cents a cubic yard less 2% for cash?
Junior, your hands clean. Your father will be home any minute now.
Sure, they're clean. But what's the answer, Mom?
Now, Sonny, homework's your problem. Having dinner ready when your father comes home is my problem. You notice that my problem's been solved.
Well, that's because you haven't got my teacher. If one fork was out of place, she'd make you set the table 100 times. Oh, Mom, I'm sick of school. Can I quit, huh, Ma?
What? Quit school at 11 years of age?
I wish they'd draft me.
Now hurry and get your books off the table. Your pop's coming now.
Oh, sure was hot in the plant today.
Well, this stove I've got here isn't any cooling system.
Hello, Ma. How's about a little kiss?
I don't mind, Riley.
There. Now you don't have to pin up Charlie Boyer's picture on the wall.
Oh. Hiya, Pop.
Hello, Junior. Go wash your hands.
Oh.
How can any boy's hands get so black doing homework?
I was trying to figure out how much it cost to ship a carload of soft coal.
Oh, no wonder your hands are so black. Next time, try the same lesson with soap.
All right.
Riley, what do you got in that long package?
This? Oh, this is a surprise.
Is it for me, Pop? A baseball bat, huh?
To me, baseball is a gruesome subject. The Dodgers lost today.
Well, what is it, huh, Pop?
This package contains what is probably one of the most great ideas your old man ever had. And that's saying plenty.
Well, thank goodness they haven't rationed conceit, or you'd be speechless.
I give you facts and you call it conceit. A prophet is without profit in his own home. And it's even worse when he's renting. Junior, I'll show you what's in the package later.
Oh, you look tired, Riley. How did things go today?
Well, I had a very tough...
Well, that's fine. I had an awful day. I went from real estate agency to real estate agency. There's just no place to live in the whole state.
Now, don't you worry, Mom. We ain't going to be homeless.
What? Did you get wind of an empty flat?
We are going to live in style.
Where, Pop?
I'll tell you all about it after grub.
Dinner. Riley, the last time you had that look in your eyes was in St. Louis. We ended up living in a trailer right behind a brewery.
Well, of course, maybe the view wasn't so good, but the air was intoxicating.
Riley, what have you got up your sleeve?
I am not at liberty to divulge details until after we grub at dinner.
Well, I'm not in the mood to coax you. Dinner's ready for wash-up.
Where's Ellie?
Eloise won't be home to dinner.
She's rehearsing with that corny dramatic class.
So I suppose it's going to be late again. A girl of 16 has got no right being out after dark alone.
Your daughter's not alone. She's with that nice boy who lives down the street.
Oh, that nice boy. I've talked with that boy. I'd rather she was alone. Some boy. 20 years old and smokes.
Why, Pop, I heard you say you smoke when you're 12.
Yes, but I didn't inhale. And I mean, I did not smoke. Well, maybe once, but my old man gave me a good licking, and I deserved it. And that's what you'll get if I catch you smoking.
Don't worry, Pop. You won't catch me.
That's fine. Well, what's about dinner? What's holding it up?
You, Riley. At least when you're making a speech on the evil of smoking, take the cigar out of your mouth. As soon as you wash your hands, you can sit down.
My hands are clean, but I'll wash them just to set you an example. Boy, we sure turning out planes now. You rolled all six today. You know, I never seen the bus so crowded like it was tonight.
Hmm. What'd you say, Riley?
I said the bus was certainly crowded tonight. Two old ladies had to stand up all the way home.
Why didn't you get up and give them your seat?
Well, there was only one seat and two ladies. I didn't want to create any ill feeling between them.
Junior, in spite of what your father says, you should always give your seat to a lady.
Okay, but if she's a whack, she's got to race me for it.
I'm so hungry, my stomach thinks there's a bottleneck in my throat. What's on the bill of fare, Mom? Not that it matters. I love anything you fix.
Oh, that's fine.
Except veal loaf.
Well, that's what we're having, and a salad.
But we had veal last night.
I know, but there was so much left, I thought we'd have it again tonight.
Hey, Pop, tell a guy, what's in that package?
Never mind, Junior. It'll keep, like the veal. Pass that stuff, will you?
Oh, stop growling. Working in an airplane plant's no harder than trying to feed this house. I only get so many ration points, you know.
Hey, Pop, did they transfer you to the landing gear department like you said they would?
Nope. The guys that are running that plant finally gave the bombsight division a new lease on life. They put me in it.
No kidding, Pop. Bombsight. Gosh, where do I tell a gang?
Bombsight, isn't that lovely?
Just between us, they've got a new sight that's a beaut. From 30,000 feet, they can part Mussolini's hair with a bomb. So I gave it a nickname. It's a blockhead buster. Hey, I just found some veal in this. What'd you do, run short of cereal? Hey, Junior, pass me another slab of that veal loaf, will you?
Here you are, Pop.
Thought you didn't like veal.
Well, I don't, but if I eat it all tonight, it won't be here tomorrow. Well, Mom, I can see you're just dying to know what's in that package, ain't you?
You know I am, but I'm not going to ask you.
Well, now here's what I've been thinking. Ever since we left Brooklyn, we've been moving from one place to another. I mean, a family shouldn't get kicked around like if they was a football.
Hey, Pop, each of the fellas at school has 10 tickets to sell for tomorrow's game.
Junior, I'm buying no football tickets. You can put that in your pipe and smoke it. And don't let me catch you smoking. Football tickets. Our money's going to be used for a better purpose.
Riley, will you please get to the point?
Well, in view of since we got to move out of here Saturday...
If you buy these tickets, Pop, you'll be sitting right on the 50-yard line.
That's all I need is to get whitewash on my good pants. Mom, I'm sick of paying rent. I'd rather have one room of our own than 10 that belong to a landlord. As the poet once said, breathes there a man with soul so dead who never to himself has said, this is my home, my native house. You know what that's from, Junior?
Yeah, Pop. It's from hunger.
Well, like I could certainly write.
Riley, what is in the package?
Plans. Plans for our new house.
Our new house?
Our home.
You want to build a new house?
Well, certainly you can't build an old one.
Gee, a new house. Can I have a ping pong table in my bedroom?
No. I got enough trouble falling asleep now without counting ping pong balls jumping over a net.
Riley, a house, it's an awfully big undertaking. How much do the plans cost?
Nothing. With the way prices have gone up, that's pretty reasonable. One of the boys in the drafting department used to be an architect. He gave them to me. Here, let me show you.
Oh, but Riley, I just remembered. The government won't allow building till the war's over.
They'll give you a priority if you're a defense worker, and you are looking at a man who falls right into that category. Now, you see, the way I figure it, we get a builder who works fast. We live in a hotel until the house is finished.
Well, it's all very exciting, but I don't know.
Well, ain't these plans neat? This fellow's built some of the finest homes in Los Angeles. He built the City Hall, and it's beautiful.
City Hall? I've never seen it.
Oh. Well, he built the city jail. Your uncle has seen that.
Now, don't start picking on Uncle Baxter.
Well, I don't want that leech to know we're planning a house. Maybe he'll decide to go back east before we move in.
Why, you ought to be ashamed. You never heard me plot against your uncle.
My uncle being dead causes us very little trouble.
Hey, Pop, show me where the banister is.
The banister? Oh, well, here, see? This is the staircase leading to the second floor. And from this window, you can practically see Catalina.
Catalina? Where are you thinking of building?
Well, on that lot we own down at the beach. I guess I was a pretty smart guy to snap up that property just before the city condemned it.
Riley, you know you can't build on condemned land.
But I saw in the paper that the land's been okayed again. You know, uncondemned. It's all politics anyway. Here, look at this living room. The fireplace is over here. It's a real fireplace.
Oh, boy, we can roast Wheaties.
Sure, I'm going to build a grill in it. Then Mr. and Mrs. Riley and their son and daughter will have a barbecue. If we can get steaks.
Well, what about Uncle Baxter?
Well, we could barbecue him, but I like steaks better.
Riley, how much will this house cost?
But the house can cost a fortune or very little if you know the right angles and get good discounts.
How much will it cost?
Huh? $6,000.
$6,000? Hi, Uncle Baxter.
Hello, Junior. Did I hear someone say $6,000? I must be in the wrong house.
Yeah, and you've been in the wrong house for the last 2 years.
Riley, that is a fine innuendo to make about your own flesh and blood.
You're not my flesh and blood.
Did I not give you a transfusion 2 years ago that saved your life? Ingratitude is the besetting sin of mankind.
Well, maybe you did give me a pint of blood once. But last week I gave a pint to the Red Cross.
I do not see the connection.
I gave him the pint you gave me. So now you're a big man with the Red Cross, and I don't owe you nothing.
My dear nephew, I never implied that you did. But since my presence here is apparently resented by the head of the house, I shall leave. In a month or so.
Uncle Baxter, you can stay as long as you like.
No.
Of course, if it'll make you feel better, you can pay us a little for your board. When you're able to.
Well, that is my fondest intention. And I expect to make a desirable connection any day now. Well, I turned down the position of doorman today at Grauman's Chinese.
Why?
I couldn't see the screen from the sidewalk.
All you do is turn down jobs and come back here to eat and sleep.
Are you insinuating that I don't bathe?
Pop, these plans are no good. Any cellar.
Don't you worry, son. There'll be a cellar when the house is finished. We can't disappoint the mice.
Uh-huh. Somebody's building a house.
And somebody's not going to live in it.
Oh, please, Riley.
Oh, all right. Now, look. Right here is the dining room. 10x8. Very nice size, not too big.
That's right. You keep the dining room small. Makes the portions look bigger.
This door leads to the kitchen.
Now, take it easy before we go any farther.
We? What do you mean, we?
What do you figure it's going to cost us to build this house?
Us?
Pop says $6,000.
Well, if your pop says six, it'll run 10, but I'll keep it down to 8.
Now, you listen here.
8? Why, we can't afford to spend anything like that. Now, after all, Riley, we've got nothing in the bank, and we don't know if your job's secure yet.
Oh, I admit I've only been at the plant for 3 months, but I can stay there for life. Didn't they switch me to a new department today?
Well, maybe we should wait about the house till you've been on the job another few months.
Yeah, just like a woman. Well, I don't want to seem conceited, but I might be a partner in that plant one of these days.
Very amusing, Riley. Douglas Aircraft taking you in as a partner.
Is that so? Well, yesterday, Mr. Douglas passed by my bench, and I heard him say very clearly to his assistant,
If that fella keeps working that way, we got to get into business. So let's have no more talk about me losing my job. I've decided to build, and that's that.
Well, Riley is right. Absolutely right.
Do me a favor, Mr. Blood Donor. Stay off my side. Now, here's the back door, Mom, for delivery.
None of the stores deliver anymore.
Say, Riley, tell me, who's going to do the building?
Oh, yes, Riley. You want someone who's very reliable.
I got a list of several builders, and I'll decide later on. Now in the kitchen.
Operator, give me Crestview 65095.
Can't you phone some other time?
Riley, be serene. Count your blessings. Hello, Jasper. That's the Turnbull. You very busy tonight? Or breaking in a new pipe, huh? Well, listen, I got some news for you. You're building a house for my nephew by marriage. Riley.
Uncle Baxter, who's on that phone?
Hold on, Jasper. I'm talking to Jasper Rangle. He's the best builder in the city, my bosom friend.
No friend of yours is going to build my house.
Now, Riley, don't cut off your nose to spite me. Not that it isn't a splendid idea. This man's an expert.
I don't want to discuss it any further. It's all settled.
Fine.
Hello, Jasper. It's all settled.
Come over right away. I'll meet you downstairs.
While the Rileys are waiting for the arrival of Uncle Baxter's friend, Mr. Rangle, here is a message from the Office of War Information. Next winter will be one of the most critical periods of the war for millions of civilians unless they take steps now to prepare their homes for the cold weather. Here are three things that can be done now to help ward off sickness and epidemics next year. One, insulate homes. Two, place orders for coal immediately. Three, check up on all heating equipment to ensure peak efficiency. This is a campaign born of wartime necessity. And because it is vital to winning the war, the government is helping to increase the flow of fuel to shortage areas. But there can be no assurance that conditions will be any less severe than last year unless everyone cooperates during the spring and summer. Well, it's an hour since Uncle Baxter has gone downstairs to meet his friend, the builder. Meanwhile, the Rileys are huddled around the blueprints of their dream home. Eloise, the daughter, having come home, has been told the big news.
Right here is the mailbox, see?
Hey, Pop, can I have a separate mailbox just for myself?
You cannot. If Superman can't write you in care of our mailbox, let him phone. Well, what do you think of the layout, Ellie?
Oh, Daddy, I think it's just wonderful. At last, I'm going to have a room all to myself. No more daybed in the dining room. Oh, Riley, it's grand you're wanting to do all this for the children and me, but the one thing worries me.
Well, what's that, Dumplin'?
The cost. Now, you say $6,000, but you know you're apt to get big ideas.
Oh, no, not me. Now, $6,000 is tops. We can borrow it from the bank. We'll pay it off like we pay our rent. Only we'll pay it regular.
Pop, we'll raise rabbits, huh, Pop?
The rabbits will take care of that.
Oh, don't interrupt, Daddy Junior. You ought to be in bed anyway. Look who's telling me to go to bed. Oh, what are you, grown up or something?
Now, Junior, don't be so fresh. And Eloise, don't boss him around.
Quiet! You kids can't stop scrapping. I'll tear up these plans and call the whole thing off.
We're sorry, Daddy.
They got a couple of boys down at the plant who know the building game from A to B. They figured every foot of lumber, every hunk of plaster, every nail. The house comes to exactly $5,920, which leaves us $80 for any incidentals.
Like furniture.
Yeah. Now all we need is a name for the place. Let's see now. How do you like Seaview Grotto?
Daddy, Grotto's more for a restaurant.
Then how's the Riley Domicile?
That's very poetic.
Well, here comes Uncle Baxter across the street with a man.
Is he handcuffed to the man?
No, it must be the builder. Now, don't let him talk you into spending any more than we plan on.
Talk me into it. What do I look like, a boob? Don't you answer that, Junior. I'm not getting mixed up with any of Uncle Baxter's pals. I'm going to get rid of this guy right away.
All right, all right. But don't be rude to the man.
Not me. Folks? It is an honor and a privilege to present my dearest crony, Jasper Rangel.
How do you do, Mr. Rangel? Hello, Mr. Rangel.
Hello, Mr. Rangel.
Goodbye, Mr. Rangel.
I beg your pardon, sir. Did you say goodbye?
Yes. I am undesirable of taking up any more of your valuable time.
Oh, now, now, Mr. Riley, my time isn't valuable.
Well, then I certainly don't want any of it.
Baxter, I think I'll be going.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Jasper.
Mr. Rangel, my husband is just trying to save. He doesn't want to take advantage of you.
He won't.
Well, dear, we might as well listen to Mr. Rangel's ideas since he's gone to the trouble of coming over.
Well, I'll listen, but with a closed mind.
Oh, fine.
Now then, Mr. Riley,
have a good cigar. And may I see the plans for your edifice?
Yeah, but it's not an edifice. It's just a house, that's all. It's cozy and nice looking. We're going to be very happy in it.
Nice looking. We'll take it from your uncle. When Rangel builds a house, nobody can touch it.
Why? Will it fall down?
Isn't that little boy up rather late?
Now, Junior, dear, go to bed. You too, Eloise.
Good night.
Good night, dear.
Okay.
If you get stuck on the building, Mr. Rangel, I've got an erector set.
My own boy was getting like that till I made him stop listening to Red Skelton. Now then, tell me more about this little dream home. I'd love to know exactly what my potential client has in mind.
Say, this isn't a bad cigar.
Yeah? And I've got several hundred boxes of them at home.
Well, say, I may let you build this house after all, Mr. Rangel.
Why, that's very flattering, sir, but I don't see how I can squeeze your house in. I'm awfully busy these days. I came over as a favor to Baxter.
Oh, really?
That's the truth, folks. Jasper's the only good builder in town that hasn't been drafted.
I'm 4F. I got caught in a cement mixer.
And besides, Jasper builds very fast.
Oh, and that's important to us, Mr. Rangel. We've got to move by Saturday.
Well, I can't build that fast.
Well, look, Mr. Rangel, we live in a hotel till you finish the house. You ain't going to let us down now, Mr. Rangel. You can't, you know. You.
Well, I don't know.
For my sake, Jasper.
Well, all right, I'll do it.
Oh, gee, thanks. Here, sit down here. Now, here's the plans. How do you like them?
Great.
Perfect. Well, it didn't take you very long to study it. You must know your business.
Exactly. I wouldn't change one detail. Now then, what did you figure on spending?
$6,000. That's absolute top.
$6,000 will be ample, I'm sure.
See, I told you, Mom. And we want the outside to be colonial.
Colonial?
Yeah, colonial.
You're going to look fine in a white wig. Now let's see the downstairs again. Uh-huh. Say, I like this closet.
Closet? That's the living room.
But this living room is only 11 by 9. I see you in the living room 22 by 18.
We must be visiting.
We'll make the living room a bit larger.
Mr. Rangel, I don't like to intrude, but if we add any space, doesn't that raise the cost?
No, we'll cut down somewhere else.
Maybe we can lower the ceiling.
That's it. And that'll give us enough margin to put in a swimming pool.
Well, the children would love a pool, but can you do that on $6,000?
We can try, my dear lady. This is an exceptional case. Your Baxter's family, and I don't expect to make one cent of profit on your house.
I get it. You just like to stick your hands in a wet cement.
Touché, Mr. Riley, touché. I see the plans call for 6 rooms.
Yeah. 3 bedrooms, a living room, kitchen, and a dining room.
Well, we'll add a rumpus room right here.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, Rangel is right.
Riley, you work very hard all day. You deserve some relaxation. Besides, the rumpus room can be used as a guest room, if you need it.
Something tells me we're going to need it.
Baxter, mark down a rumpus room leading off the gymnasium.
Gymnasium?
And there'll be a nice view from your gym, Mr. Riley. You'll be able to see your tennis court.
My tennis court?
Oh, Riley, it sounds wonderful.
Yes, sir. When Rangel builds them, it thrills him. I can see you now, Mr. R. You wake in the morning, 3 sets of tennis on your court, a cool, refreshing swim in your pool, a workout in your gym, breakfast in your magnificent garden.
And then I bum a ride to the plant.
Now, the minute you get your priority, we'll break ground. Mrs. Riley, you can well be proud of your husband. This is the smartest $13,000 he ever spent.
$13,000?
Well, that is $13,000 for anyone else. But for Baxter's sake, I'll whittle it down to $12,500. Of course, you'll only have two rooms.
$12,500? I told you I want a six-room house for $6,000.
Sure, but you've got expensive tastes. You want swimming pools. You want tennis courts.
Who wants swimming pools and tennis courts? All I want is those players back. I never sent for you in the first place.
No, no, no. Keep calm, Riley.
I'll go back to get this guy out of here and get him to take you with him.
Now, Riley, there's no use losing your head.
Now, folks, if it's a $6,000 house you want, I can easily do that.
You'll beat it. We'll live in a street before you build a house first. I'll get a house with six rooms. Three bedrooms, a living room, kitchen, and a dining room. And no guest room. You hear that, Uncle Baxter? No guest room.
Come along, Jasper, and forgive my vehement nephew.
Oh, Riley, you ought to be ashamed yelling like that.
How do you like that phony builder? We listen to him, we'd be in hock all our life.
Riley, Riley, what are you doing at that window?
Hey, Randall, and another thing. This is the worst cigar I ever smoked.
Demand for passenger service on railroads and buses will reach new all-time peaks during the late spring, summer, and autumn. If people travel as usual, reserved accommodations may be sold out in advance to persons whose trips are not essential. In such cases, no accommodations are left for servicemen trying to get home on furlough, or for businessmen who have been unable to make plans in advance and are suddenly called to other cities on war matters. Reduction of unnecessary civilian travel is therefore essential if space is to be assured for members of the armed forces and war production engineers and executives. Let us do our part. Follow The Life of Riley next week at this same time. William Bendix as Riley appears by arrangement with Hal Roach Studios. The Life of Riley is written by Irvin Brecker and directed by Don Bernard. This is Carlton Cadell speaking. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, I hope you enjoyed some laughs in that last episode. You're listening to Island Fugitive from the series of Life of Riley. The episode was first heard on the evening of Friday, February 9th, 1951, on NBC, and starred William Bendix as Chester A. Riley. Well, I'm afraid my time with you this week is almost up, but I'll pass along my contact information should you wish to send me feedback on today's program. My email address is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com, and my mailing address is Old Parlor Radio, 28 15th Avenue, Prince George's, BC, Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS Studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.